This is a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.
Right, are you ready? Good, yeah. Should we get on with it? Fine, let's do it. A quick trip through the universe is on the way in this week's Fun Kids Science Weekly. Yeah, my name's Dan. Thank you so much for giving us a listen as we learn the most weird and epic things that are science-y and that exist in the world and in the galaxy, really. This week, we learn about one of the most strangely, surprisingly mean beasts in the ocean. Also, we uncover the secrets of a radio wave that have been sent from deep space. Could it be an alien? Who knows? We'll try and find out today, though. And we'll answer one of your questions, actually. One of your questions. It's all about bones. We've got a proper expert to talk us through it. Quincy in Michigan, if you're listening, it's your question today. So stay there. We'll get the answer to that in just a little bit. Also, we've got some shout-outs to catch up on after Professor Hallock's, and he's looking inside your body.
Professor Hallock's Kaleidoscope Antibiotic. Oh, I don't feel well. I think I've got an infection. Nurse Nanobot? Computer?
The human body is full of microbes, tiny living organisms that are found pretty much everywhere on Earth. There are five main types of microbes, with three of the most common being viruses, like the common cold, bacteria that can cause pneumonia, and fungi that can cause athlete's foot. Most microbes cause no harm to the body, and many help keep you alive, so it's important to look after them. Some, though, can be harmful and cause infections.
Professor, use a tissue! Tissues help to stop harmful microbes from spreading. I'll tell you what, why don't I give you a checkup? I could take a look inside your body to see what's going on. 1 minute, I'll charge up the heli-telly bubble.
Ah, my amazing invention that can shrink us to the size of an atom. 50 nanometers should do it, Nanobot. That's 1,500 times smaller than a human hair is wide. Bon voyage!
Heli-telly bubble, ready for launch in 3, 2, 1.
Engaging thrusters. Microbes detected. Setting bearings. Entering your mouth. Gosh, it's crowded in here. Looks like the sensors picked up a beautiful streptococcus. This microbe is a type of bacteria. They are single-cell organisms which often grow in communities. They look like chains, and if I try to touch one, they're very slippery. Streptococci are responsible for a large majority of problems in the mouth, from throat infections to tooth decay. And as well as streptococci, there's lots of other different types of bacteria. In fact, there's so many, the computer can't keep up.
Staphylococcus, Prevotella, Bacteroides.
The number's gone off the scale. There's millions of bacteria in here. It's probably because bacteria like the sugar you eat.
Excuse me. Mine's quite a clean mouth, I'll have you know. I brush my teeth twice a day. If I didn't clean them regularly, I could have as many as a billion bacteria hanging around on just one tooth.
Ew!
Come on, Nanobot! You know that, like many microbes, most bacteria are nothing to worry about. Most are entirely harmless, and some are even extremely useful to us.
Lactobacillus helps turn milk into yogurt and helps food to be digested, whilst Bacteroides help bodies make important vitamins.
Well, even though it's bacteria central in here, it's all looking pretty normal. I don't think the streptococcus is making you feel poorly because there isn't much sugar around here.
Microbe detected.
Just taking a detour into the nose. Oh, yes, I can see a whole host of different microbes in here, stuck to all the hairs. In fact, they're viruses. The damage they've caused to these cells has made the delicate skin very irritated and sore. This could be the reason you're feeling rotten. This gang are called rhinovirus. They cause the common cold. Each individual virus looks like a bubbly ball, and they're very small indeed, only 30 nanometers wide. You could fit over 30,000 of them on a full stop. I'll take an image for the databank.
It says here that there's over 200 types of rhinovirus, which is probably why the common cold is, well, so common.
Virus comes from a Latin word which means slimy, liquid, or poison.
Ha! Well, I can understand why with all that snot they produce. But viruses can't reproduce without using cell material from other living things, and that can cause damage in the process, which is what causes the unpleasant symptoms. But how do we know it's a virus, Nanobot? After all, there's lots of different types of microbe.
Well, viruses are some of the very smallest microbes, so size is a clue. We can also tell by the way they reproduce. This one has invaded a cell and is forcing it to create thousands of copies of the virus. That's how viruses reproduce. And given the number of cells they've invaded, I think I've found your infection.
Good work, Nanobot. Time to head home. Set the heli-telly bubble coordinates for the lab. Achoo!
Professor Hallux's Kaleidoscope Antibiotic. With support from eBug and Public Health England. Find out more at funkidslive.com/Hallux or visit e-bug.eu.
Right, let's do some shout-outs on the show then. People who have got in touch, hello to Lillian Davis. Hey, Lillian. Hello to Max. Also, hello to Esther Dunn, who is eight, who sent in a brilliant question all about the cactus and how it stays alive and keeps hydrated in the desert where there's almost no water ever. Esther, it's a brilliant question. Bear with me. If you hang on just a few weeks, I'm really trying to sort out like a cactus and desert and weather and ecological expert to try and answer that for you. Because you know, right, that is the easiest way that you can get your science question answered by a proper genius expert, don't you? It's so easy. You just need to go to the iTunes podcast store, find the Fun Kids Science Weekly, and then leave us a review. There's a place where you can put your name, so I can give you a shout-out, just like this. Also, you can give us 5 stars. That really helps out with the chart. And then in the little comment box below, you can ask a question that you want answered. Just like this, from Ella, Ollie, Immy and Seb. They are in Quebec, but they're originally British, but they're in Canada. And they say they love listening to the show on long car journeys, and they've got a question. Why are lips red? I know this one, actually. I don't need, like, a proper genius lip expert to answer it for you. It's really simple when you think about it. It's because the skin is much thinner around your lips. And you can tell this quite a lot of the time if you accidentally bite your lips, you know, when sometimes that happens. And most of the time they'll bleed, won't they? Well, that's because all the capillaries and all the blood is really close to the surface. So you can almost see it through the skin. That's why it gives it that reddy pink look anyway. Cheers, guys. Have fun over there in Quebec. Thanks so much for listening to the show. And if you've got a question that you want answered by a proper science expert, you need to go through me first. Let me know what it is. Leave us the Find the Kids Science Weekly a review over on the iTunes podcast store. Now, it's the Fun Kids Science Weekly. This was sent in as a review for the show over on the iTunes podcast store by Quincy, who is 8 years old from Michigan over in the States. Hey, Quincy. He asks, what exactly is a growing pain and why do they hurt so bad? Well, Dr. Benjamin Jacobs, Quincy, is a consultant paediatrician at the Royal National Orthopaedic Hospital, and he's on the line to tell us more. Thank you so much for joining us. So let's get straight into it with Quincy's question then. What exactly is a growing pain?
A growing pain is nothing to worry about. It's the sort of pain that lots of boys and girls get when they're growing up. They often notice some pain in their legs, and sometimes they get pain in their back as well, and they usually see a doctor who checks out to make sure it's nothing serious and then says, oh, it's just a growing pain, and it'll settle down when you're grown up.
What are they, though? What causes these growing pains? I mean, I remember my legs used to absolutely ache. I'd have to sit in baths, boiling baths, for hours on end. What makes this happen? Is it very simply just our bones getting bigger?
The truth is that nobody knows exactly why some children get growing pains and others don't. It's not simply that they're growing, because there are lots of children who grow a lot more. There are some very tall children who never get any pains at all. So it's not a simple condition that we understand yet. But we know that there are lots of reasons why some children will get more pains as they grow. One of the things that I'm particularly interested in is vitamin D. And it's clear to us now that if a child lacks vitamin D, they're much more likely to get pain in their legs. So there are many reasons why some children will get pain. We don't always know exactly why, but one of the important reasons that we have recently come to understand is that if a child doesn't have a good diet or they don't get enough sunshine, their bones and their muscles will be a bit weak, and that causes pain.
Well, Quincy lives up in Michigan, which is in the colder end of the United States. And I mean, right now where we are, it's the winter, so there's not too much sunshine about. How would we get round this, Benjamin? You're talking about diet. What foods would we need to eat which are quite high in vitamin D?
There are very few foods that are naturally rich in vitamin D. The only food that really has a reasonable amount of vitamin D is fish, and not all fish, but it's really the oily fish like tuna, salmon. Nobody's likely to eat fish every day, at least not in Michigan or in this country, and therefore you don't get enough vitamin D just from the diet unless you eat foods that have been artificially fortified with vitamin D, or you take a supplement as a tablet or a spray. You are unlikely to get enough vitamin D by mouth. You're supposed to get it from sunshine, but you're absolutely right that in the north of America, in places like Michigan and in the whole of the UK, we just do not get enough sunshine, especially not in the winter time.
So that helps us almost cure the cause, but how can we stop the effects, Benjamin? Is there anything that we can do if we are really, really aching in the legs? Is there anything that can help us?
Well, I would say the two things that people should do, if a child really is getting a lot of pain in the legs, they should see a doctor to check that there's nothing else causing the problem. If it's just growing pains, then the second thing I would suggest is that you make sure that the child has a good diet generally and also has enough vitamin D. Vitamin D on its own is not enough. One has to eat enough calcium, for instance. Calcium and many other nutrients are really important for healthy bones. And two things that children often lack in this country are calcium, vitamin D, or iron. So these are common problems in the diet that we really should focus on first. If a child has a really good diet and is getting enough calcium and iron and they're taking vitamin D and they still have pains in the legs, then we can start to think about other treatments and other things you can do. But I would say the first thing is make sure there's nothing else wrong by seeing a doctor. Second, make sure there's a good diet with enough vitamin D, and then that will solve most of the problems. Occasionally, you have to try other things, but the one thing that I would strongly recommend is make sure you get enough vitamin D at this time of year.
Quincy, well, that's your question answered. Thanks so much for sending in. Dr. Benjamin, while I've got you on the line, is it okay if I just quickly fire over some other bone questions?
Sure.
You spoke about calcium a second ago. Why is it so important that we have a lot of calcium, and how does it go from our mouths to then strengthening our bones? Like, how does that system all work?
Great. That's one of my favourite questions, so thank you. First of all, can I just say you're absolutely right. We do have a lot of calcium. So if the average adult weighs 70 kilograms, about 1 kilogram of the body weight will be calcium. There's a lot of calcium in our body, and almost all of it is in the bones. It's really important in the bones, but there's a small amount of calcium that goes around in the blood and in every single part of the body. There's a little bit of calcium, and that is really important for many functions of the body, including a regular heartbeat, functions of the brain, the nerves, the muscles. Everything requires calcium. You asked how it gets into the bones. Well, you have to eat it. You don't get calcium from sunshine. You have to eat or drink calcium, and you mainly get that from milk and dairy foods, and lots of foods like fish and many vegetables and so on have calcium. But to get it into your bones, you first have to absorb the milk from the stomach. It then has to go into your blood, and from your blood, it has to get into the bones. And that process requires vitamin D. So vitamin D is what you can get naturally from the sunshine, and you need the vitamin D to for the body to process the calcium, to absorb it, to put it into the bones. There's one other important chemical in the body which helps this process, and it's actually a hormone called parathyroid hormone. This is a special chemical produced in the neck. There are four little glands in the front of your neck called parathyroid glands that produce this chemical, and this helps the body control the movement of calcium within the body to absorb it from the stomach, and also to control how much we lose in the urine. So it's quite a complicated process, but it's a process that we've recently come to understand very well from scientific studies, and it is important that everybody gets enough calcium in their body. We simply cannot live without calcium.
My last question, Dr. Benjamin, is all about when you break your bone. So say someone has broken their arm maybe, and you look at the x-ray and it very clearly shows the one bone is now two very separate bones with a massive jagged edge through the middle. How do these reform into one bone again? How do they know how to join? How do they meet up once more?
Well, bones are actually really clever, and it's amazing how a bone can be broken into two pieces the way you just described, or even shattered into lots of pieces, and they naturally heal up. Just like if you cut your skin, the skin is divided into two separate pieces. The ends of the broken skin grow very, very fast until they meet together. And the same thing happens with bones. The bone starts to grow very, very fast. You get a lot of extra bone. We call that callus. And that callus then remodels into a nice smooth shape. And after a few months, the bone is usually all stuck together nicely. And after a year or two, it'll be completely healed. And you usually can't tell that it was broken. It heals up so perfectly in children. It's one of the reasons why I really enjoy my job. Children come with all sorts of broken and damaged bones, diseased bones, but the body has a natural way of healing up amazingly fast and amazingly effectively.
Well, there you go. Benjamin, thank you so much for coming on and helping answer Quincy's questions and some of mine. Brilliant. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, this week, on our tour of the most dangerous and deadly things in the universe, we're headed under the sea to avoid and definitely not tread on the mysterious flower urchin. It's this week's Dangerous Dan, and it's a type of sea urchin, quite a common one across the Pacific Ocean, really. Now, although they look like a fluffy, spiky, rocky kind of thing floating around the sea, they're actually an animal. They're an echinoderm, which is the sort of creature that a starfish is and a sea cucumber is as well. They're all echinoderms, and the flower urchin is just like incredibly dangerous in a really strange way. They're covered in spikes and these long thin arms, but the spikes aren't a worry at all. It's the arms that you need to focus on, because if these are left untouched and undisturbed, they'll relax. They'll open up, they'll expand like a flower into a kind of a cup. But they're covered in tiny sensors, And when they're brushed by something, the cup, it'll snap shut. That's it, it's over. The claws that are on them, they'll trap whichever's been caught, and it'll break off. And these claws will stick inside the prey. They'll inject a venom that will make you struggle to breathe. It'll make you feel giddy, dizzy. Your muscles will become paralysed. You won't be able to move. Now, the good thing, I guess if you can say this, is that the flower urchin won't really kill you. But it will stay with you for hours. The poison, it will swim around your blood, stopping you from doing anything. We'll try and get to the bottom of radio waves that have been sent by deep space in just a sec. And the scariest thing is, no scientist really knows where they've come from. Some even think it might be like a proper alien spaceship trying to get in touch. This kind of thing has only happened once before. And you can find out more after we catch up with our weather expert on the Fun Kid Science Weekly. Let's look to the sky with Marina Ventura.
Marina Ventura's Climate Explorers.
Hi there, Marina Ventura here. I love finding out about the natural world, and that includes the Earth's climate. We know that weather can change from one day to the next, but climates can change too over the time span of years, centuries, or even longer. So I'm on a mission to fill MapApp with the latest climate information with the help of some awesome climate explorers. Come on then, let's go. Do you know how to tell the age of a tree? Maybe you know it's something you find when you cut into the trunk. It's the rings, right? By counting the rings, you can find out the age of a tree. Have a look out for tree stumps next time you're in the park or woods, and you can count them for yourself. You might also know that those rings hold clues to the climate in the past. Wet years will mean wider gaps between the rings as the tree grew very quickly, whereas very dry years will have a narrower gap as the tree didn't grow much that year.
That's right, Marina. Forests can help unlock many more secrets about the climate. They take carbon dioxide from the air and store it in trees, plants, and the soil. They are also home to much of the world's wildlife.
Time to meet our next climate explorer.
Hi, I'm Phil, and I'm a forest scientist. Maybe you've been learning at school that forests are important, and one reason is that trees, like all plants, absorb carbon dioxide, which is a gas we exhale, and which is a waste product from burning fossil fuels. The more carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, the warmer the planet becomes. So it's great that plants store carbon, but how can we tell how much?
I suppose trees don't have a list of ingredients on the side like a packet of crisps.
Unfortunately not. I use lasers to estimate the weight of trees. This helps us to figure out how much carbon, something we call biomass, there is in the environment, and how it's moving between plants and the atmosphere. Sometimes we use satellites to measure the forest as well. We use a variety of technology to gather as much information as we can.
Wow! Lasers! Sounds pretty exciting.
I'd like a laser like that.
No, they don't make that kind of noise. It would be fun if they did. It's really important for us to be able to measure this because we know that humans are causing damage to forests. This damage is not just caused by chopping down trees, but also when fires are used to clear the ground. As well as releasing carbon back into the atmosphere, cutting down forests can affect the local climate and environment. Rainfall patterns can be disrupted also. That's important for local people. And by removing the forests, we are also threatening the animals and plants that live there with extinction. Once a forest is cleared, modern industrial farming can decrease the soil's nutrients, releasing more carbon into the atmosphere. So by measuring the amount of carbon in forests, we get a clearer picture of how important they are for protecting our planet against climate change.
Good work, Phil. Really valuable stuff. We've met a few climate explorers now, and something they all have in common is that gathering information is an important part of their jobs.
That's right. Whether it's from the clouds or volcanoes, the seabed or the rainforests.
And we've gathered lots of new information too. Ready for upload, Mappy?
Load me up.
Next time, we'll be doing some puddle jumping and finding out how we can learn about climate change from flooding right here in the UK. See you soon.
Marina Ventura's Climate Explorers, supported by the Natural Environment Research Council, the science of the natural world. Find out more at funkidslive.com/marina.
Right, let's do this week's Science in the News. Astronomers have revealed details of mysterious signals that they've picked up, which have been sent from a distant galaxy. A telescope in Canada received 13 fast radio bursts in a strange repeating signal coming from something that was 1.5 billion light years away. Perhaps it's aliens. Who knows? Scientists don't really know. The strongest theory at the moment is that it's from a huge star spinning with a strong magnetic field, or from two neutron stars merging. Keep your fingers crossed, maybe it's a spaceship. Also, let's find out how dogs can help stop climate change. A new pet food claims that 40% of its munch is made from flies, not cattle. Many people think that breeding cows causes much of the greenhouse gases, which are harming the world, and they fart a lot, which lets out a lot of methane. So this company is stopping using cows for their food, and dogs are eating flies in it instead. And finally, a total of 73 unrecorded types of apples and pears have been found, and they're said to be completely unique to Wales. About 200 trees were DNA tested across 2 years to find new varieties of fruit, and some of these have now been taken on and grown in more orchards across the country. One variety is the Anglesey Sweet Jane, which has been grown from trees that are over 100 years old over in Anglesey. Right, that is it for this week's episode of the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Thank you so much for giving us a listen. Thank you so much to Dr. Benjamin Jacobs for helping us out if we're feeling some growing pains at the moment. That question was sent in by Quincy from Michigan. Quincy, brilliant question, mate. Keep them coming. If you've got a question right that you want answered by a proper science expert, maybe something it was something that your teacher told you at school, and then you sat there for a second, stroked your chin thoughtfully, scratched your head, and you thought, there's no way that can be true. Well, I can find out for you. Ask me. Leave it as a review over on the iTunes podcast store. Find the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Leave your name, drop 5 stars, and leave your question there as well, and I'll get it sorted. Also, while you're on iTunes, it's one of the best places that you can hear all the brilliant science series that we do on Fun Kids. There are loads of them. You've only heard a couple today. There are tons more. They're all on iTunes. They're all on the free Fun Kids app, and you can have a listen at funkidslive.com. And Fun Kids, we're a kids radio station in the UK. You can find us, if you're in the country, on your DAB digital radio, on that free Fun Kids app, and as always, at funkidslive.com.
So that was a podcast from the children's radio station, Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.